Hello and welcome to the Eraser Podcast, which needs a name because we don't have a name. It's just Eraser Podcast. I'm your host, Parker Kligerman, NASCAR driver, and you know the rest. And I am joined by a special duo who work with me on Eraser. One of the founders, Josh Mendoza, also known as Mr. Race Control. He does all the race control for our huge sim racing events and has a unique view of being possibly the only person in the world who actually finds race control interesting. And the controller king himself, our king of social media, AJ Henderson, who will be giving us the fan perspective. What are we going to talk about on this podcast? Motorsports, sim racing, and of course, Eraser. All right, guys, how'd my intro go?
That was a beautiful intro. Hello, everybody. I am the voice of Joshua Mendoza, the only person in the world that finds race control interesting and doesn't get absolutely annoyed with it. Although, if you were on my Twitter timeline this last weekend, you might think I would feel otherwise, as I was not entirely satisfied with what happened in the F1 race. So, I guess that kind of leads into our first topic.
Yeah, well, we got to introduce AJ as well.
Yeah,
AJ, introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm AJ. I'm the controller king. I'm not really sure why I'm here, but I guess Parker and Josh just like me. So
that's exactly why you're here.
Okay, I mean, great.
I kind of like him. Parker's the one that brought you in. I figured, yeah, you're okay to be here. No, I like you.
It's a lesson, and that's a lesson, by the way, in how AJ ended up here, because he had a Twitter and I liked what was on his Twitter. And then I said, hey, why don't you do that tweeting stuff for us? And now you're here on a podcast. So Gary V would be like something work for, you know, make content.
That is exactly what Gary V would say. You're right. We should get Gary V on the podcast.
I think he's probably our next guest.
Who is Gary? Who is Gary
first
V?
Guest. You know who Gary V is?
No. enlighten me as well as probably half the audience. Probably. I don't know.
No, everyone knows him. Gary V, he's like the big, you know, business hustler.
Big entrepreneur guy.
Yeah. Has an agency now. He's big about mm-hmm. content. You take content, you cut up to 100 pieces, blah, blah.
Okay. Yeah, he goes to garage sales.
I see that. So I go to garage NFTs. Sales too, so I'm pretty close to him.
Yeah, he sells NFTs.
So. All right.
Well, we don't do that.
Yeah, let's get into this. Let's get into why people are coming here. So we are going to talk motorsports and such. Basically, this podcast came about because this is what we do in our Discord all the time. Is talk about things in racing and sim racing. And we were like, hell, that could be a podcast. So this is why we're trying this. And our big topic today, we're recording this on Monday, December 13th. Hopefully we'll drop tomorrow, is the Formula One finale there in the big fight and championship decider between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton and all the controversy surrounding the race control decisions, guys, starting with even on the first lap, we had an issue, which I will get into my side of it. But first, I want to start with Josh here, because Josh, you love, I know we gave a little bit of background, but you are our race controller on Eraser broadcasts or Eraser events, and you're very serious about it. You've written 98% of our rule book. What did you see in that first issue where Lewis cuts the track and doesn't have to give his position back that as a race controller you would have done different?
I mean, initially, the thing that comes to mind is the fact that they say that he gave his advantage back, which, I mean, regardless of how you look at that, I think most audience members would disagree with that opinion. You look into the corner, even before Max Verstappen sent his car in onto the inside, which, I mean, if you leave the hole open, you can expect something like that on the first lap. That was not a second and a half of differential between the two. And it basically gave Lewis the ability to bypass DRS in several laps. Even if he had the speed, he was already out of DRS range by the end of the next corner, a second and a half ahead. I would say a slowdown of at least a second, give a second back, or at least till where they're side by side. And I don't feel like that was given. I would have given a slowdown of at least a second and a half, if not give the position back.
I'm with you. AJ, you are the controller king, which I don't think we've explained why you're the controller king to anyone that's listening to this. So you're the controller king because you are by far, we don't know if there's a way to prove this
allegedly.
Yet. Allegedly. Well, allegedly.
Let's just go with allegedly.
The fastest iRacer in the world on a controller. So if anyone's listening to this and they have a way for us to prove that, or if they think there's someone else out there that could be possibly faster than you, I want to find out. We need to set up a competition.
Please contact us.
Yeah, let us know. So as a guy on a controller watching that, what would be, I mean, we were watching it together on F1 Breakfast Channel, and we were all just like, what the hell?
Yeah, I I'm a little biased as a Max fan, not going to lie.
That's
Goat
right.
Stappen, as like we like to call him in my house. I think, you know, granted, he did send it, but I guess per the rules, if he's there by the apex, you know, it's no biggie. He also didn't go off track. Lewis did. You could say Lewis was avoiding contact, which I think he was. I don't think that's the issue there. Obviously, the issue is, you know, Lewis just was like, yeah, I'm going to cut the corner. No slowdown for me. And, yeah, I don't know. I was pretty upset for about an hour, and then Max won, so it didn't matter.
So, well, yeah, because Goat Stappen is what you call him?
That's his thing, yeah.
I love how you put your bias right out there, because that's perfect, because we need to get that out in the open.
It's warranted, just because how good Max is, you know?
No, like, well, yeah.
He can't be.
I'm not sure he's the Goat yet. He was going up against the Goat, in my opinion. Lewis Hamilton would be the Goat.
I mean,
sure. So, the current GOAT.
I was actually
I'll
with AJ. So for those who don't know, I'm on the West Coast, so it's not getting up at 7 a.m. It's getting up at 4:45 in the morning for me. And that was a tough decision to make if I really wanted to do that. And then when I got up and watched the stewards basically make that call, I questioned why I even woke up, because I felt like that was just basically it was going to go completely safety car free for the rest of the race. And I mean, I'll go ahead and I'll give the benefit of the doubt here that I feel like as a steward, you want to go into a weekend with a certain mindset of you want to do certain things in order to not influence the race that much. And to me, based on that, as well as I forgot what other incident where they said no investigation necessary, it was like between Vettel or somebody. And they both said no investigation necessary. We're clearly in the past, there was a clear precedent that there was going to be investigation. And maybe the FIA had a pre-race briefing where like, hey, look, we don't want to get involved. We want this race to be a race of racers, which, great, that's fantastic. But clearly, that did not stick coming to the end of the race. So I don't know if that's a good transition or if we want to talk about it more.
Well, we'll get in there. I just need to put some of my two cents in here. So basically, if you follow me on Twitter, which I'm assuming if you're listening to this right now, especially this episode, then you do, because you'll be our early adopters. I hate track limits, and I think they are a crutch for not allowing racing to evolve with the new type of track where there's runoff for ages instead of gravel and grass. And instead, they're this crutch of saying, like, well, just act like there's grass out there sort of thing. These arbitrary lines that are just completely ridiculous and should just be allowed to be able to run out there if you want. The only thing I have a problem with is when you shortcut the course. So in NASCAR, the officials, basically, when we go to a road course where there's ability for us to shortcut a corner like that, maybe it's a chicane just like that or the chicane at Charlotte, it doesn't matter how you get there. If you find yourself going through the shortcut, you got to come to a complete stop and then get going. I think it's an insanely large penalty for going through the chicane, but what it does is it just makes it very black and white. You go into that area, you got to come to a complete stop or stop in the safe zone right there on start-finish line if you go through the other chicane on the backstretch. So I like that ruling because shortcutting to me is always going to be really hard to police. Like when they were saying Lewis went and gave back the time. Oh, really? Like how are you going to tell me that he full throttled it through the center of the track, massively shorter, full throttled it, and then somehow we're going to decide that there was some arbitrary time difference between the two that would have factored out if he stayed on the track. Like, that's complete BS. So no, I don't agree with that. I think he should have had to get back behind Max. And I know there's some who are like, oh, they're avoiding incident and all this stuff, but I believe that's the position that, you know, as racers, that's what you do. Like, you use your car to inhibit the progress of your competitors. And when you go to, I grew up racing oatmeal racing. In America, when you're racing oatmeal cars as a young kid who wants to go to Europe, all you are told is no matter how much you win over here, you're not ready for Europe. And the reason being is that in Europe, it is some of the dirtiest, some of the absolute most aggressive racing you'll ever experience your entire life, where people use their cars to inhibit your progress or put you in a compromising position. That is what they are taught. It is life or death over there as you're trying to work your way up to the ranks to get to Formula One. So many people want to be there. The money is so big. There's a lot on the line. So what Max did there and what the racing we see at the front, I'm okay with that. I'm always saying put it in the racer's hands. But when you shortcut the course, that side I have a problem with. That's a big no for me. Should have had to should have gotten back behind Max and then raced from there. So we can move on to the next one because I think that's the biggie, right, was the next issue that occurred when Nicholas Latifi there crashes his Williams into the barrier.
We should talk about Checo Perez.
Oh, what? What right? about that?
Sergio, when he was holding up Lewis.
Well, that was badass.
That was
awesome. We should just touch on that briefly.
All right.
How amazing that was.
That is incredible. I think the no team orders that's in NASCAR really can ruin a lot of the cool things that is owning a multi-car team. I mean, the more you invest in the sport, the more you should be able to have that. As long as it's not a tent wrecking or like a Clint Boyer type situation where you're scratching your hand and causing a caution. I think having people who can slow other people up, that's incredible. I think that's part of the dynamic. And the fact that we don't see more of that, and we try to treat each team inside the race or in each of these teams as complete independent cars, I think that's kind of boring. I mean, you have multiple cars. Why not use that to your advantage? What's the big deal? And that's what I love about F1.
Well, did you watch Atlanta earlier this year?
I did. And clearly... Clearly, there wasn't any issues there, or Bristol as well, where Chase Elliott slowed down Kevin so that Kyle Larson could get the win. There isn't an issue with that. I just feel like so many people try to call that out as an issue, like it's a bad thing, and I don't think it is. I think it's awesome.
AJ, do you not remember how Kurt Busch was able to get by Kyle Busch there at Atlanta because the 42 car game happened to be in the same lane that Kyle was having to run for about two or three laps?
The thing that always standed out in my mind wasn't stuff like that, like somebody holding up the leader. I think it was last year at Martinsville when Eric Jones just didn't pass Denny Hamlin. That was the thing that's always stood out to me.
Yeah.
But you can probably prove that somebody can't pass somebody, I guess.
Yeah, I remember that.
Even if you run them down from 5 seconds back or whatever.
Right, and it was the point difference for the playoffs. And yep. I actually had a problem. I remember that, and I don't know if I said in the broadcast, maybe I did. I kind of openly wondered about that decision. You know, like, is that allowed? But obviously it is. But I just, there's no way to prove like someone did or did not try to pass someone. But
right.
That sort of thing is, it happens.
Regardless, I feel like that should be something that could be openly talked about on the radio. Like, the fact that it has to be so secretive, like with the whole Ross Chastain, Kurt Busch deal, I don't think they told, hey, Ross, hold up Kyle Busch so that, you know, Kurt can continue to do whatever he's going to do. Like, the fact that is such a thing where people don't want to see that sort of stuff, it makes me sad, because it's like, well, what's the point of having a teammate if your teammate isn't a teammate? You know, I don't know. I just think it's kind of silly that it's such a voodoo subject, and that's coming from somebody who, I want to see everyone perform at their best, but at the same time, it's really cool.
You've also completely derailed us, by the way.
I'm sorry.
No, I still want to keep talking about this because that's really interesting. Because if somebody does that in NASCAR, like the Ross Chastain, Kurt Busch thing, that I would be upset by that. But if it happens in F1, I think it's awesome, which I do think it was awesome when Sergio held up Lewis. I guess maybe since teams are more of a thing in F1 might be why.
Yeah. Well, they have to be. Remember, they only have one pit stall, too. So they got to work together. Right.
Yeah.
And the constructors' championship is more important than the drivers' championship. Right. Like, that's the one that pays all the money. So,
right.
I think that's where it's different in NASCAR. Yes, it's the car owner points, but the car owner points go hand in hand with the driver points. So, you know, car owners get paid, obviously, and that's the payout to the car, but it's the driver is more important than the team. And, you know, continually is the biggest, you know, the biggest star of each thing. So I think that's why it's more of an individualistic sport. And that's more American too, right? Like we are more about the individual. When we talk about football teams, you know, everyone focuses on the QB, right? Like that is because we're taking an individual and making them the center point of a team-based sport, which is just a very American thing. But yeah. I did love Perez's ability to hold off Lewis.
That was incredible.
I didn't think he would. But the funny thing was, Lewis was obviously taking his time and taking it easy because he knew he had such a gap. He knew he had a faster car. But you can also look at how Lewis raced Max, where Max had such a mental and physical advantage in this race, in the fact that if they both wreck, then Max wins the championship on the tiebreaker, right? Until the fastest lap stuff happened. But really, that to me was so fascinating how Lewis raced him, because Lewis was in such a compromising position and at such a disadvantage because he didn't have the, you know, in F1, we've seen it a million times where or at least Michael Schumacher often, with what he did at Damon Hill in 94, what he did to Villeneuve in 97, his parking it in 06, a Monaco racing against Fernando Alonso for the championship. Like, he had a history of doing that, and it became a common thread, and that comes from what I talked about earlier, what you're told when you're racing in Europe and how you're supposed to race. It's do anything you can at all cost. That's what was so interesting is, I remember predicted that they were going to crash together and Max was going to win the championship.
You did predict that. That almost happened on lap one.
It did. I thought when he sent it down there, I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, that was it.
All right.
Another thing where, you know, Lewis was at a disadvantage is that he didn't have Valtteri at all to help him. Valtteri was pretty much not a factor the whole race.
I think he went out a little too hard the night before or something.
Yeah, something. He was, he got swallowed up on the start, I believe, and then he kind of just hung out in the back.
Yeah, that was, I don't know why he was so out of it, but who knows.
All right.
Let's move on to lap
52. Yeah.
Is that the crash, Nicholas Latifi?
I believe it was lap 52 or lap 53. It was one of those 51, 52, or 53, somewhere in there. Nicholas Latifi gets caught up in a collision with Mick Schumacher that results in him wrecking in one of the corners there.
Yeah, I believe the full thing is what happens is they made contact out of a corner, and Latifi was forced onto a curb, which allegedly cut his tire.
Oh,
I believe that's what happened. I could be wrong, but looking at the replay, he did hop up onto a curb pretty aggressively when they made contact.
I'm just shocked the curb can do that to a tire. I thought curbs were a semi. They were supposed to be a penalty of upsetting your car, not a penalty of causing your car to have a flat tire. That seems like an aggressive penalty, almost as bad as a sausage curb.
Guys, we're 17 minutes into this. We're not going into curbs.
All right. Anyways,
you didn't see the contact between those two, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I know about it. I'm just saying the point is the wreck happens, the caution comes out, the safety car. They have to throw a safety car because there's a car literally sitting in the racetrack on fire. And that's from that point onward, it was a discussion if they could get the lap cars out of the way and around and clean up that car and restart this race, right? That was the discussion. And what ensued from then on was almost chaos, and especially from Mercedes' point of view, they, you know, were in a lose-lose situation where if they pit and they don't send those cars around and Max takes the lead, then they never get back to him. If Max pits and they send those cars back around, he's on new tires. They're in a vulnerable position. And so it put Lewis and the Mercedes team in just like a no-win situation. And at the same time, it was confusing whether they were going to get this race restarted or not, right? Then you add in, as we rumbled towards the final lap, they were able to send the lap cars around, which I guess if you read the rules is sort of up for discussion. Maybe it wasn't supposed to happen, but it's supposed to be everyone, and therefore the race isn't supposed to be restarted because they couldn't get them around and back to the end of the field in time. But this goes to a broader I should say, by the way, they do restart the race. Max goes on to pass Lewis Hamilton in that awesome last lap duel, but Lewis was a sitting duck, and I think should just drove in the back. I'm kidding. And goes on, you know, Max goes on to win the championship. I think that the big discussion here, and I just wrote 700 words about this that we're going to send out to our email subscribers here at Eraser. Subscribe, you know, what's up. About what this really showed was F1's change in the last couple of years, ethos-wise, from being about the pureness of the sport and now being more about entertainment. And this started, you know, if you look at the history of Formula 1, forever it was about the pureness of the sport. Remember, this is a sport that allowed six cars to start the U.S. Grand Prix back at Indianapolis because half the field, or more than half the field, was having issues with their Michelin tires. And instead of putting a chicane on the track and allowing the fans and the world to see what they came to see, they allowed six cars on Bridgestone tires to start the race. And it was a complete and utter farce in front of 200 some odd thousand people because it was about the pureness of the regulations of the sport that didn't allow them to change the track. Absolutely ridiculous, right? That is since then been a massive change over the coming years, and especially when Liberty Media bought F1 from Bernie Ecclestone and his group, they have slowly but surely been more about entertainment. But the that starts with the safety cars. You've obviously noticed there's more safety cars than there is virtual safety cars. That is something that's come around in recent years. Whether you call it safety or not, it's a little bit of entertainment factor. You have budget caps that are coming in to hopefully make things more, you know, more parity through the sport, more competitive. You have a new car being designed that's less controlled by the teams and more of a, you know, a tighter box so that things are closer and the competition is closer. So all these things are about entertainment. But the last thing to catch up to the entertainment that's maybe just not been admitted is you have a rule book and regulations that are about a pure sport, and you have a group up there in race control who's trying to make it an entertaining race. And I think that's where we ended up where we were. And I'll start with you, Josh, from your opinion and all your, I know you're pretty hyped up on this. I don't mind that they went for entertainment. I think the problem is that the rule book is not designed for it, and they need to redo it to allow themselves to just fully say, look, we're about entertainment.
I'm totally late. I'm on board with do one or the other. I mean, when you have gray area, yes, that allows for a person like myself to come in, look at what they're doing, and make a personal decision, especially when it comes to safety. Gray area is okay. But the problem is when you have a rule book that has a lot of clear defined rules and it does have gray area, it, even as a race director, it can be sometimes hard to make sure that you follow every single procedure as it's written out in the rule book. And you might tell me, well, that's what you get paid to do. Here's the deal. There are certain situations that are written in a rule book that are so, so far out there, but they're in the rule book for whatever reason, because they've happened one time before, and you're basically required to know where that is in that rule book, know the exact regulation in order for you to make sure that you plan out how that restart's going to go or how X and YZ is going to happen in a lap or two. That's crazy. That's just insane. But my opinion was, you know, just coming back to this, why the heck did they just not red flag the race like they did in Azerbaijan? That's, to me, that was the right move. It was a precedent set in Azerbaijan. The first time around, we're going to red flag this race so everyone has an opportunity to get their, you know, make their tire changes. We can get the track cleaned up in however much time it takes. And then we're going to get an incredible race to the finish. Instead, we have the safety car that's out here burning laps. You have confusion. You say no, you know, lap cars are not going to be allowed to pass. You have angry fans that are like, since when do lap cars not get allowed to pass? That's a crazy precedent. We rarely ever do that. And then you say, okay, five of the eight lap cars can pass. And then people are like, well, wait, you can't pull the safety car in until the lap afterwards. And then you have the part of the rule book where that says the race director has overriding authority for the use of the safety car. And it's just like, okay, we got all this extra crap when we could have just red flagged the race, had everybody do their thing, and had this incredible fight for the finish. And the fact that they set a precedent in Baku or Azerbaijan, for those who don't watch the sport, those are two in the same thing. They have this precedent set there that they're going to red flag the race and go back racing with two laps to go instead of using the safety car. And to me, it's the same exact race director Why didn't the race director make the same call?
But, AJ, before you jump in on this, that was because the track needed to be repaired at Baku, if I remember correctly. The wall or something. So yeah. They didn't want the car circulating around.
I get that makes sense to me, but you've already set a precedent that when it's that close to the end, you're willing to throw a red flag. Just throw a red
to
flag.
And have a green flag finish.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean,
and it's like in NASCAR, we got green, white checkers, man. Let's go. AJ, you want green, white checkers in F1?
You know, as a Max fan, with how
I love that caveat,
with how happy I was with how the weekend went, particularly the last five laps, I can't imagine if we would have had a red flag. Max and Lewis, they both put on soft tires and then they just go at it for two laps. Mm-hmm. Imagine how epic that would be. Because let's say Max still wins, right? There isn't a sort of stigma from particularly, you know, Mercedes fans about the finish. You know, they'd be like, you know, good win, Max. You know, you earned it. Yeah. You know, when Lewis is on, what was it, like 25 lap old mediums or whatever it was, you know, Max still earned it, but it wasn't, you know, he didn't earn it.
He was sitting duck.
Yeah, he was sitting duck. Yeah.
I mean, he was screwed, and this is, I think this has opened up a whole can of worms because, you know, the other side of it is it's exciting off-season discussion. Hell, we're doing a podcast about it, right? Like, this is what they want. This is good in that sense, but I think you're going to have some changes and some rules that will change, and things will become clearer. But what's happening is, and I think they're seeing the results and the benefit of it because F1's, you know, exploding in popularity, is that you make it entertaining, and you're going to have more people watch. And the funny thing is, F1 for years was, you know, 60% of the on-track was on-track stuff was the entertainment value, and about 40% was the off-track. It was like the courtroom battles, the hearings, the, you know, the suing for having an illegal part, or, you know, trying to wait to the right time to release to the FIA that you want to contest or protest a part that another team has, trying to figure out what they have. Like, that whole side for many years was a huge portion of the entertainment because the on-track stuff wasn't that good, right?
Yeah, and with Drive to Survive now,
yeah,
that gives it even. That's like the biscuits and gravy of Drive to Survive is all the politics behind the scenes.
100%. So this just, we know this is just going to continue to add to that. So, you know, how do you make a rule set? And maybe, you know, maybe this is by design. Maybe we're not even giving them enough credit. Maybe they've left it vague and up to poor Michael Massey, who's, you know, public enemy number one of the Lewis Hamilton Mercedes fan group. Maybe they're doing that on purpose, you know?
What year was it when they started broadcasting the radio communications from race control? Wasn't that long ago, was it?
It was this year. No.
Yeah.
Oh, was it this year?
Yeah, they just started doing it this year because I don't remember ever happening last
year. I'd never seen that before. Yeah.
I you know, and that's one thing I think is awesome. The exposing more of what the team principals do, because I feel like a lot of people enjoyed team principals, but the fact that you see team principals going up, talking to the race director in the middle of the race, and you get to hear that as a race fan, that is incredible. That is an unprecedented level of access, and it is so entertaining because it plays right into what you guys were saying about that politics of the sport. It's a debate in the middle of a race, so you're like sitting here and like, oh my goodness, are they going to actually do this? And you're on the edge of your seat for this completely off-track item that in most motorsports, they don't even show you.
You saying at eRacer events, we need to
say, we need to get you your own Twitch stream.
Yeah, your own channel. On.
I mean, it would be pretty entertaining. Absolutely. You probably also would hear me screaming at the top of my lung, these guys better not wreck again, probably half the time.
It's an interesting contrast, too, to like NASCAR, because, you know, obviously, if you have a radio, you could probably listen to the race control on NASCAR communicating with teams. But you never hear the interaction back from like a crew chief. Like, they're never like having a one-on-one conversation. It's
you only ever hear one. You
park up for two laps and then you're like, oh yeah, I guess we just got to do it. There's no argument because they're not going to change their mind at all.
You know,
it's a great
you can't
point.
Persuade them.
Need that content.
Let I completely agree. I want to bring this back to F1. So for some of you guys who still haven't heard or been living under a rock with the F1 situation, post-race, Max Verstappen won, clearly. Mercedes filed two protests against the results of the race, the classification of the race. The first was against Red Bull, saying that Max Verstappen passed while a safety car was deployed. That one was fairly quickly dismissed by FIA, saying that, yes, he did pass, but it was for a very short time, and it was not after the safety car had been withdrawn and still on track, what have you. Basically, he got his nose ahead for a millisecond and then let Lewis right back by. And then the second one was against the return of the safety car on the same lap that the five cars were told to go around the safety car rather than the following lap as written in articles 48.12, which basically says any cars that have been lapped by the leader will be required to pass the cars on the lead lap and the safety car. And once the last lapped car has passed the leader and the safety car will return to the pits at the end of the following lap, saying that that was not properly done, and that they believe that that they should be going to the penultimate lap as the results rather than the actual final lap. That one was also dismissed that under the following rules. Let me get to that. Basically saying that the race director has control of the safety car, which allows both deployment and withdraw. And that while the rule where any lap cars can go by, it does not necessarily mean that all lap cars have to go by. And that that there was also the safety car in this lap message was posted to the teams on the penultimate lap, which means that the safety car would be withdrawn and there would be one lap left. As soon as that message is displayed to the teams, that the safety car must return at the end of that lap. Basically saying that the protest was dismissed for both of them. And that at that point, they would be that there's no more protest. Now, the question is, Mercedes going to take this to the International Court of Appeals or whatever it is and see if they can get a third party to potentially do something?
That was quite the technical summation. Thank you very much. I almost fell asleep halfway through, but
I'm sorry.
I'm just glad they decided to go racing again. If that ends under yellow, AJ, F1 breakfast is dead. We are not watching anymore.
Would have been so upset.
No, not allowed.
I would have been so upset.
Yeah, just terrible. Terrible.
Can imagine the backlash that would come if it finished under yellow. Which I understand from a pure rules perspective, you know, I'm sure that's probably allowed. But it's the modern era with how much content there is online from sports and other places. You just can't do that.
100% agree. Mm-hmm. Can't do it.
Even if you are the fastest growing sport in the world, you just can't do that.
The race director actually has a section here where he comments and he says the race director had stated that it was agreed by all the teams that where possible, it was highly desirable for the race to end in a green condition, i.e. not under a safety car. So even the race director and the teams agree finishing under green is way more entertaining and way more desired than under a safety car.
Guys, I also just want to say that earlier this year, back in January this year, I was speaking to a friend and I had this I've talked about this a lot over the last couple of years, but since Lewis Hamilton hit 7 titles, I said if he doesn't win this coming year, he will never win an 8th title. And for all of you out there who looked at my tweet and saw where I talked about the 7 titles thing, that doesn't count drag racing or rally racing because they're not wheel-to-wheel circuit-based racing series, so they don't count. But if you look across the racing world of all those in the top-level motorsport, the most championships in NASCAR Cup Series, 7. The most championships in Formula 1, 7. The most championships in V8 Supercars, 7. The most championships in MotoGP, 7. What am I wrong?
Dirt Sprint Car Racing.
Dirt Sprint Car Racing. That's the only one. But
yes.
Oh, I'm not even going to say this. I'm going to get destroyed. But is that truly a top-level motorsport?
Whoa! Okay, buddy. Yep, end the podcast. We're done.
We made one episode.
I love dirt racing. I love it. I think the World of Outlaws is awesome. But, I mean,
you are never being invited back to the fake 500 now.
Well, no, that's not.
They're never going to have you back.
I raced USAC midgets. I have massive respect for that world. I'm just saying, is the World of Outlaws the top level of dirt, or is it World of Outlaws late models, or is it USAC, you know, sprint cars? What do you consider the top level of dirt?
I mean, based off of popularity, I'd probably say dirt sprint cars, World of Outlaws.
So World of Outlaws. Okay, so then Kinzer is the only one to break it. So there you go. He's the only one to break it. Some people mentioned Frank Kimmel to me. Love Frank Kimmel. Good friend of mine. I was actually his son was my roommate in college. But that doesn't count because ARCA is not top level. So anyway, I'll stick by my thing. Lewis Hamilton is never going to win in our championship, unfortunately. And I was hoping he'd get 8. I thought it'd be pretty cool. So, well, guys, we got to move in the next section of the podcast.
Well,
what's the next section?
Can we, before we say that, until this goes through the International Court of Appeals, he could still win an 8th championship this year.
Yeah, they're not going to overturn it.
I completely agree. And I just to close out, my opinion on the International Court of Appeals, if anything, the International Court of Appeals or whatever they're doing, all they'll do is just basically say, this last race never happened. We're just going to act like it never happened because that's the only way to do this fair. We're not going to do penultimate laps. It's not fair. You can't cut the race distance short. We're just going to act like this race never happened. And if that happens, Max Verstappen wins through the tiebreaker. I think that's at the end of the day. That would be the only conclusion that would be the most fair that they would do.
Except for all the people that bought tickets and the people that watched on TV like us who invest their time and money to go see a race that they're doing, saying, oh, by the way, that race didn't matter.
Well, I mean, it's just like the most F1 seasons. The last couple of the races of the season don't matter. So.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, a little different. If you're like wiping the race from history, like, is there no winner in the race?
Like, it's an exhibition.
That would be, I feel like that'd be such more of a blemish on the sport than just a race control error.
Oh, absolutely. I completely
even with like the way it ended, this is still like a very legendary race we're going to be talking about 20 years from now.
Yeah. Absolutely. No doubt. All right, next section. I feel
news.
Like that was covered.
You did. It's just, yeah, we got that. Everyone understands our opinions and points. I will be sending out that email probably before you get this podcast. But anyway, let's do the news. Anyone have a topic?
We
do news. We do news.
I wonder if your topic is the same as mine, because I don't have a second one.
We don't tell each other.
No, we didn't talk about this.
We should explain. So this is where we just pick a news topic in either sim racing, motorsports, esports, you name it. You just one topic per person and why it caught your interest. Go, AJ.
Me?
Yep.
I was just going to talk about the F1 car on iRacing. Does that count as news?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's a week old, but...
Yeah, but this is the first podcast. We didn't have a podcast a week ago.
That's true.
The F1 car on iRacing, the W12 from Mercedes, is the greatest car I have ever driven on a controller. And I can't get enough of it. And that's probably immediately what I'm going to do once we get done recording this.
Yeah.
And that is my topic.
Like it. Josh?
I was going to comment on the fact that we're not going to see Paul Tracy back at NBC for IndyCar next year. I think that's kind of interesting. Have they announced who the next one, who's going to replace him inside the booth?
Have they announced who's going to replace Jeff Gordon in the booth? Is Larry Mack coming back?
Well, they're not. They're just doing a two-man booth.
Oh, okay.
And Mike Choi.
Neat. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep. I'm gonna say the news that caught my eye today happened while I was on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Is that Todd Bodine is going to make a return to the NASCAR Truck Series next year.
At least six
races. Yeah, because he's getting the 800 starts. Todd was a good friend of mine. Helped me out a ton when I was first getting the Truck Series back in 2010, 2011, 2012. And that's cool. Glad to see it. So cool for him to go get 800 starts. And I think the other thing that's interesting is he'll notice the trucks have not changed, which is part of the beauty of the trucks in 10 years. So the only thing really is probably the motors. That'll be hard for him to get adjusted to, but everything else, he'll he'll probably be like, well, this feels pretty similar from what I remember. So
yeah, I remember Todd Bodine back in the day. That was when I was first getting into the sport, was when he was kind of like on his way out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be neat to see him now.
It's because you're
all these years later. I am.
Are you even old enough to be on this podcast?
We talked about it before. The first race weekend that I watched a NASCAR race was your first race weekend in truck series, in the national series.
Which one? 2009 Kansas?
Oh, that was 2010.
No, that was trucks. First time I did a truck race.
So I have this beautiful memory about our times starting in NASCAR. You in the top three series and me watching as a fan, and it was a lie the whole time.
That's a complete lie.
I was lying to myself.
It's completely false.
Wow.
Our fact checking on here is awesome.
You did something 2010 at Texas in the fall race.
That was my first ever truck start for BKR. Yes. So you had that right.
But you already made truck starts before that?
No, that was my first one. I had made Xfinity starts before that.
Oh, okay. You did a little leapfrogging. Okay.
Yeah. I did my first race was 2009 Kansas Xfinity for Penske. I won the pole. You know, humble brag. And then, yeah, I did Miami that year. And then I was doing a partial Xfinity season in 2010. And then in 2011, we were trying to I wasn't going to get an Xfinity ride because there was no sponsorship. So Brad was trying to get his truck team started. And he and I came together and he's like, let's do a race at Texas or whatever late in the year so we can get Roger and everyone excited about it. And that's what we did. And we went, had a good run, top 10. It was interesting. So
neat.
Yep, neato.
What are we talking about now?
Sim racing. Anything in sim racing that we want? You already used your sim racing.
No.
What do you want to get into?
I want to get into the fact that we just finished up the 2021 Landon Castle Qualifying Challenge. And what an event that was. Wasn't that just... I love the new format with the all-star qualifying, the pursuit race head-to-head. I think that was an exciting, exciting event.
It was badass. I think the open qualifying was cool. The setup we made was fun to watch people trying to get in. And, you know, maybe the sessions were a little too long and the broadcast was the longest thing ever until the next night. But I thought that was cool. All-star qualifying was amazing. Casey Kerwin being the last car out, getting iced, goes fastest. The pursuit race was incredible, even with all the controversy of people trying to call us out for when we called cautions. But that was fun. The broadcast was the single longest time I've ever been on a camera. I think we ended up at like 5 hours and 50 minutes. So that was insane. And I thought that was great. And then the finale was awesome. And Graham Bullen was just incredible. We handed out $12,600, which brings, how much money have we given out to eRacer?
$64,600.
And that could be a potential now, Josh, add together where we've had those big bonus ones. What would we be at right now?
I think the first, it'd be pretty darn close to 100,000. I don't know if we're over it yet because we had what? The first one was a 15,000. Was it 20,000? 20,000.
Was it 15 and then 25 or something?
I think it was 15.
I think they were both 20, I thought.
No, I think the first one was 15 and the second one was $20,000.
Got it.
So that would be an additional $35,000.
About 90.
It's a pretty, it is pretty darn close to 100,000 that we've almost given out at eRacer. So,
what's crazy is we started this basically, but our first event was June, July of last year. So 2020.
Which I finished fourth in, by the way.
Oh yeah. Congrats. And then you didn't know at the time you were going to be working here and doing podcasts. So in basically a little bit more than a year and a half, we've almost given out $100,000. I think we've got to be, someone was asking me this the other day, we're definitely the biggest independent in the United States in terms of money. We're probably in the top 5 or 10 in the world.
Oh yeah.
Motorsports, esports things, giving out money. So,
yeah, I mean, we're all of our events have been in the top 50, according to an esports payout agency for iRacing. We're like in the top 40 events in history, and that includes the Coke series. So as like an event and whatnot. So that's pretty crazy.
I love that. So cool. For us, if you're wondering what's next, by the way, we have a lot of exciting stuff happen. We've got a whole merch thing happening, which is gonna be cool. We've got some stuff we can't talk about yet, but it's gonna be really cool. And I think if we look at 2022, you know, we'll hopefully have another 500 event with the COT again, early in the year. The other initiative for eRacer is going to be that we're going to be in front of you every day. It may be weekly, but you're going to have to hide from us every day if you want to. So I won't go into much more, but we got a lot of stuff planned and way more ways people can to race with us and make a lot of money. So I'm looking forward to that.
Me too, for sure.
Yep. Well, guys, I think this is where we basically have to ask everyone, if you've listened this far, please help us out with a name for this. Feel free to give us nicknames. That would be cool, too. Or eRacer Podcast just stays forever, and it's the most boring name ever. I think there's got to be something more interesting.
There's got to be something.
Somebody will think of something good. I know they will.
Yeah, and it's we're basically, for anyone who's wondering, we're looking for a name that encapsulates both sim racing and real life racing, and how we're cross promoting both and discussing about both in one place.
Which is what eRacer is about. Mm-hmm. It's where we're trying to make the connections between sim racing and real life stronger. That's why Landon Castle and I came together to do this with Josh. Now AJ, our team is growing. It's awesome. A lot of fun. If there's something you want to hear on this podcast, like we didn't get into it, let us know. And then also, we're going to hopefully be doing these probably live going forward. So either here in our Discord, we'll do like the stage thing, and maybe we'll bring people up and they can ask questions or whatever. And maybe we'll do it on Twitter Spaces. So that'll be fun as well.
I vote that we name the podcast It's Called a Motor Race Podcast.
Oh, no, it's called a Motor Race Podcast.
It's a Wonderful Day for an Afternoon Motor Race Podcast.
Oh, that's really can we call it RG Bargy Podcast?
No one's British in here.
We can find somebody.
Clearly, if you're listening, we need help. This is a problem. We are all not creative enough to come up with a name, but
if
maybe you are creative.
British, preferably around Oxford.
Of an Oxford dialect?
Yes.
Feel free to send in your resume to admin@eracer.gg, and we'll be sure to put you on as the fourth member of our podcast here. All right, I'm going to shut this thing down. Everyone follow us on eRacer. Check out our Discord. And I guess we'll do this, what, Mondays or Tuesdays, hopefully weekly going forward. So stick with us.
We have to do it weekly. We can't stop.
We got to.
You know how many podcasts I found are like, oh my gosh, this is such a good podcast. I'm going to listen to this every week, and then they stop doing it.
We're not going to
be really
people.
That's really frustrating. Anyways, yep, that's the end of our podcast. If you want to sponsor us, admin@eracer.gg.
Peace.
Is it over now? Oh, whoops.
This is the end of the podcast, folks. If you're hearing this,
hey, we're really
leaving. Goodbye.
I want to go to this F1 car, man.
We're going to go race some F1 cars. We'll see you later at the next podcast. See us next week.
Maybe. Is it actually over now?
That was awesome.